From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Guy Raz. First this hour, the U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to enter the health care debate. The court said today that it will review President Obama's health care overhaul, the law known formally as the Patient Protection and Affordable Health Care Act. As if to underline the significance of the case, the court allocated more than 5 hours of oral argument. That would make this the longest argument in modern times. We're joined now by our correspondents who cover the Supreme Court and health policy, NPR's Nina Totenberg and Julie Robner. And let me start with you, Nina. 5.5 hours? Holy moly! Why so long?
Well, Guy, I can only assume the justices wanted to be as comprehensive as possible and to take a look at all of the questions raised in the lower courts, even when some of those questions were dismissed as total losers. The bottom line here is that the court certified 4 questions for review. First, and the most important, is whether Congress exceeded its constitutional authority in requiring virtually all Americans to have basic health care coverage. And second, if that individual mandate is unconstitutional, whether the rest of the law stands or whether, as even the government now says, there would be no way to provide the goodies everyone likes in this law without the expanded pool of people paying into the system. The third question is whether the law imposes unconstitutional conditions on the states by requiring them to pay 5% more into Medicaid by 2017 to cover the increased number of people under the program. And the last question is whether it's premature to decide the first three.
Now, if the law was struck down, Julie, it would roll back a lot of the provisions that are already in effect. First of all, what are some of those provisions?
Well, some of them are the most popular provisions in the law. One of them lets young people up to age 26 stay on their parents' health insurance plans. Almost everyone with health insurance is now eligible for preventive care services like immunizations and cancer screenings without having to pay a deductible or coinsurance. And seniors on Medicare are seeing that gap in their prescription drug coverage, known as the donut hole, gradually being closed. All those things would go away if the law was struck down in its entirety.
So, Nina, 4 federal appeals courts now have ruled on the health care law. Just one struck down any part of it. That was the 11th Circuit ruling in the Florida case. It struck down the individual mandate. Why did the Supreme Court choose this case as its vehicle for review?
This really was the case everybody expected the court to accept, Guy. And there are a lot of reasons. First is the fact that this was the only case in which any part of the law was, in fact, struck down. Second, this is the biggest case brought by Florida and 25 other states, plus the National Federation of Independent Business. And the third reason is that the lawyers who represent the parties in the state's case are old hands before the court. They're well known for the quality of their work, and the justices do take that kind of thing into consideration in choosing among cases, particularly in a big case like this.
What about the timing?
The argument will likely take place in March with a decision by the end of June, which, of course, is just about 4 months before the 2012 election.
Julie, if this decision comes right in the middle of the election, what impact could it have?
Well, that's, of course, the trillion-dollar question.
Yeah.
That's how much this law costs.
Yeah.
And, of course, nobody really knows. Now, in the past, it's usually those on the losing side of major Supreme Court cases who tend to get motivated. For example, Roe v. Wade, the famous case that legalized abortion in 1973, is also credited with all but creating the anti-abortion movement. But in this case, it might not help President Obama to have his defining domestic legislative achievement struck down as unconstitutional right as he's running for re-election. It would give Republicans a huge I told you so moment. So the political fallout in this case, it's kind of hard to predict.
Nina, let me return to this question of the length of the argument. How does that compare 5.5 hours to other oral arguments before the court?
Well, before 1849, there was no time limit at all, and often the lawyers would go on literally for days. In 1849, the increased caseload caused the justices to set a 2-hour limit per side, which was reduced to 1 hour in 1925 and a half hour per side in 1970, which is where it remains for most cases today. But big cases with many parties and a lot of complexities sometimes get more. The Nixon tapes case was 3 hours. The McCain-Feingold campaign finance challenge in 2003, that was 4 hours. Brown versus the Board of Education, the first time it was argued was 5 hours. And the only case that I can find that's longer than the healthcare case was in 1965, the challenge to the Voting Rights Act argued for 6.5 hours over 2 days, and this one probably will be argued over two days.
That's absolutely fascinating. I had no idea. Julie, one thing that seems notable about today's announcement is that those on both sides of this issue, the people who think that the insurance requirement is constitutional and those who think it's not, they are praising the court's decision to take up the case now. Why is that?
Well, I think one thing everybody wants right now when it comes to this law is some sense of certainty. Mm. Both states and businesses who are planning for big changes starting in 2014 want to know if those changes are going to happen and to what extent. And, you know, for all the talk of these 26 states that are suing to have the law overturned, only 4 states have actually turned down all the federal money that's being given out to plan for those changes that are scheduled to take place. So you might say they've been hedging their bets. Now, even though most court watchers say it would be very unlikely the court would strike down the entire law, if that individual insurance requirement is held unconstitutional, there are a lot of questions. Would that mean the part of the law requiring insurance companies to accept people with pre-existing conditions would have to fall too? Those two have been considered inextricably linked, particularly by the insurance industry, which says it can't afford to cover sick people if healthy people don't have to sign up for insurance too.
Julie, Nina, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was NPR's health policy correspondent, Julie Rovner, and NPR's legal affairs correspondent, Nina Totenberg.